Hello and welcome back to the Adventures in Advising podcast. This is episode 94 on our way to episode 100. This is Matt Markin. And on today's episode, we continue with bringing back a previous guest to come back on the pod, but this time as a guest host. So today's guest host is Thomas Shelley, academic advisor at Oregon State University. Thomas was on episode 71 of the Adventures in Advising podcast titled Thriving and Connecting in Advising. And during our tri-region conference last year between regions 8, 9, and 10 in Las Vegas, we got to know Thomas a lot better, and we actually adopted him into our region 9. So Thomas, welcome back to the podcast.
Happy to be here. Happy to be wanted. Yeah, absolutely. And we're here today with a good friend of mine, great colleague, all-around wonderful human person, Bree Harvey, an accomplished professional in higher education, has seemingly blended a background in music and sciences with a fervor for academic growth. Currently, as the Associate Director of Academic Advising at Southern Alberta Institute of Technology, Bree brings nearly 15 years of experience to guide students toward their educational and career goals. With a foundation of music and sciences, Bree is currently pursuing a Master's of Arts in Interdisciplinary Studies, showcasing a commitment to holistic learning. Research interests span early support programs, career development in post-secondary education, and addressing imposter syndrome. Bree's contributions to the field have not gone unnoticed. She was recently awarded the Alberta Services for Students Conference Team Award in 2013 and the Linda Shantz Memorial Award for Outstanding Staff Member in 2021. Bree is recognized for outstanding contributions in student services. In 2022, Bree completed the Emerging Leaders Program, highlighting a dedication to continuous professional development, and is currently serving as the NACADA Region 8 Chair. Bree is a key figure in shaping the landscape of academic advising regionally, nationally, and globally. Bree's journey exemplifies a blending of diverse academic interests, professional achievements, and an unwavering commitment to fostering student success. So welcome, Bree.
Thanks for having me. That's quite the intro.
Absolutely. I can't believe you made me read that.
I can't believe I wrote that.
To start out today, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your adventures in academic advising. In particular, I want to know where it really started. What was your journey into higher education like?
Yeah, it was kind of by accident, which I think is fairly common in our field. I don't think there's a lot of people that wake up in the morning and like, I want to be an academic advisor when I grow up. But I had just finished my sciences program. I was at a small liberal arts institution, and I had done some student volunteer work as a student ambassador and got an email about this recruitment job that was opening up. And I had big plans to make it as a professional musician in a city with next to no professional music landscape. And so I was trying real hard to make it. And then I saw this job come up, and I thought, you know what, maybe it's time to try something a little bit different. And I jumped into recruitment and immediately fell in love. I loved the recruiting. I was fairly young, so I didn't mind being on the road all the time, but I really liked getting to help students kind of find their path through life. So I recruited for a little bit and then moved into advising not long after that, and then fell even more in love with working in post-secondary. And then eventually moved to a bigger institution, and then I stayed there. I was at Mount Royal University for almost 10 years doing advising, doing early support. Eventually moved into management and found that was kind of where that was my jam. I really like management. I still do in advising and helping other young professionals move through their career. And so that was great. It was a really good step for me. And then just a few months ago in October, I left Mount Royal and moved to the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology, which we call SAIT, into their Associate Director of Advising role. And Nikata's been kind of sprinkled throughout, and here I am.
There you are. And here you are.
And that's, here I am.
Yeah. I also appreciated in your intro this kind of blend of arts and sciences. I think that has a lot to do with perhaps your liberal educational experience at a liberal college as well. How do you kind of blend those into your like techniques for advising students?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I use it as an example of not having any idea what you want to do with the rest of your life. We get a lot of students that come and they're 17. And I mean, I don't do a lot of face-to-face student stuff anymore. But back when I did, they'd come at 17 and be like, this is it. I'm going to be whatever, a lawyer, a pilot, an interior decorator. This is exactly what I'm going to be. And I'm not allowed to change my mind. And I would tell them, great, let's do that. And then 6 months later, when they're like, nope, I hate it. I want to change my mind and I don't know what I want to do. I would use myself as a bit of a, like, I hear you. I can empathize. I started in music, went to an art school and fell in love with sciences. And now I'm doing a master's in arts. And like, it's okay. You'll figure it out. Your life will sort itself out as long as you're willing to try new things. And so I use kind of the blend as a bit of a, you're not alone. Lots of people change their minds. And also just to really like kind of approach things from a holistic perspective and be like, it's not necessarily about what you want to do at the end, but what you enjoy right now, because what you enjoy right now will inform what you do at the end. And so when I was in music, I loved music, but in the end, it didn't make sense to me. And I moved back home and then ended up in sciences and that made sense to me. And then that led me to this seemingly unrelated career that I've really grown into. So yeah, finding your passion in the minute and then just go with that. The rest of it, you have a long life. It'll figure itself out.
Yeah. Figure it out, you know. Speaking of, you know, those kinds of transitions in life, being at SAIT now, can you describe what that transition has been like for you? And what advice do you have for people looking for work or, you know, looking at transitioning into different roles?
Yeah, the transition was, I mean, it's been really, really great. The word I use the most is aggressive, and I mean it in a really positive way, but it was a really aggressive change. I had been at Mount Royal for almost 10 years. I was comfortable. I knew all the people. I knew all the things. It was very, very easy to go to work, even if there were challenges, but I was ready for something different. And so we were looking, or they were looking, SAIT at the time was looking to completely revamp their academic advising bucket. It was kind of all over the place at the time. And part of that involved hiring an associate director. And so it was a brand new position. And I'd worked previously with the leader that was overseeing it and knew I really respected her and liked her a lot and thought, great, I am ready for a new challenge. I know that I trust and really respect the leader. And I'm excited by the opportunity to get to build something kind of ground up. And so I made the jump. And it's been a lot. It's been a lot of learning, but really exciting. I think when I think about whether or when people are applying for new jobs, a lot of people get hung up on the job itself. And I believe that there's more value in looking at the culture that you're looking for as opposed to the role. Even the worst job is bearable if you're in a culture that you enjoy. And if you enjoy the people you're working with, and if you respect and enjoy the people you're working for. So I encourage people to look at the culture and find out what they can about what the work environment's really like. And then find what works for you, because everybody's going to have their own different things that they're looking for. Yeah. And so just thinking about what you want that 9-to-5 to look like, if it's going to be 40 hours of your life every week, you should enjoy it. As much as I said life's long, like 3 minutes ago, it's also short. It's started in a job you don't like. It's a podcast of changing my mind.
Good.
And then I say too, like, if you're on the fence, a lot of people like, I don't know if I should apply for the job, do it. It's better to apply for it and back out if you change your mind or not get it than to kick yourself down the road for not applying for that gig. So I say always apply. Even the worst interview is an opportunity to learn. And maybe you just kill it and it's great and you get the job and then you're happy.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Cracking the college admissions code just got easier. I'm Rebecca Gordon, your go-to fictional college admissions counselor for the rich and famous. Tune into The Admissions Game, Satire Edition, and uncover my top secrets for sure-fire Ivy League admission. Ditch the old Photoshop your face onto a water polo hunk trick. We reveal all the latest loopholes. So laugh and learn with The Admissions Game, wherever you podcast.
There you go. Yeah. Happiness, instantaneous right? Happiness is great. Yeah. I do have a follow-up about that. What was and maybe it was kind of multiple things as you went along. What was that trigger for you at SAIT that was like, this is my, you know, these are my people, this is my fit?
Mm-hmm.
Helped you make that decision.
There were a few things for sure. I'm going to give you a bit of a strange answer for this. One of the weirdest things that I found really interesting is space is a big issue at the institution. So kind of people hodgepodged across campus. And I don't have a department that I oversee in one space. So they're all also around campus. And when I started, the only place they had for me was on the fourth floor of one of the newer buildings in a school in our, it's the McPhail School of Energy, so with all of our energy programs, with a bunch of instructors. And beside me is our Director of Indigenous Engagement on one side, and on the other side is our Associate Registrar and Team Lead for International Recruitment. And then I have instructors across me. Like, it's just this weird kind of island of misfit toys up here of people that didn't have anywhere else to go. And every single one of them loved where they worked. They have very different experiences and very different roles, but everybody's like, you're going to love it. Say it's great. And I think that was really encouraging because as much as I knew what I was getting into and I knew that the people I was going to be working with were passionate about what they did, it's encouraging to see that kind of pan-institutional passion as well. And just how excited everybody's been for the change. Change is terrifying, new word, terrifying. Mm-hmm. It can be really scary and really uneasy. And I know that people are very passionate about what they do, especially in kind of service industry stuff like academic advising. And they were all really keen. Even the ones who were a little bit like, I don't totally know I'm going to like where this lands, but I'm excited to see what happens in the meantime. It's been really encouraging.
Absolutely. I think that's great. Yeah. I think fit has so much to do with finding value and finding finding your place, and that's so important.
Huge.
Speaking of places, we are both from Canada.
Yes.
Don't you just love this? And we've had this conversation before, but I think the listeners will really appreciate it. I'm curious for you to share how the Canadian higher education system may differ in contrast to the U.S.
Yeah, and we have talked about this. I think this is something that we need to talk about more. It's a very interesting comparison to make because they're both exactly the same and completely different all at the same time. When you look at the actual role of advising, the roles are very similar, right? If you really whittle it down to very, very base terms, we're doing a lot of the same work. But it's like the more you scale out from there, the more different they get. One of the biggest differences I saw early on was the difference in student to advisor ratios. In Canada, it is not uncommon to have several thousand students per advisor, which is next to unheard of in the United States from what I've kind of gathered in my years in Nevada. But that's where the world gets really different. So in Canada, we see 2,000 students per advisor, but you're doing way less case management, way less proactive reach out. It is a very reactive role. So that is a big difference between the two. And we're just starting in Canada to kind of embrace that smaller ratio and look at doing more case management. And I hope that we learn some things from our friends south of the border, but that is the biggest kind of obvious difference between the two. Mm-hmm. The other big difference, and one that I've talked about a lot, is the difference in the education that you need to do the work. I know in the States it is very, very common for it to be mandatory to have graduate level education, either a master's or a D or a PhD or whatever, in order to do advising. And that is just not the case in Canada. Like you mentioned in my intro, I'm just working on my master's now. I'm almost done. thank heavens, almost finished, and I am senior management and advising. My supervisor does not have a doctorate. She also has a master's. My advisors, I think two or three of them have masters. Most of them have just degrees, and that's all they really need to do the work. And I think it's both, it's great to encourage higher education and further education, but it's also very career limiting if you aren't able to go after that graduate level degree. And so I see the value, but I also see it as being a little bit of a barrier for some professionals, some young professionals. So I hope that we stay like we are and we don't require master's degrees to do advising in Canada, but at the same time, maybe develop then more opportunities for graduate level work in our young professionals. And I think a lot of that comes down to, we have 10% the population of the United States, which means we have 10% of the institutions. And I think it's actually less than that. But we don't have the same access to college and university settings. So yeah, it's just a bit of a different landscape there as far as education. But it's at the end of the day, like I said, same role, just different buckets we fall into.
Yeah, I would say in contrast in the U.S., my bachelor's degree was in teaching. I taught language arts for a number of years before transitioning into higher education, and I was even like 89% done with my master's degree applying for jobs, and not a single interview. And I
was like, please. That's wild.
I work with children all the time. I've graduated hundreds and hundreds of children, and I can do that with higher education too. Please give me a chance. But yeah, the second I had my internship under my belt, I was like, ooh.
Well, and I think what really, and it kind of grinds my gears a little bit, if I'm going to turn this answer into a bit of a rant, but I don't understand the push to have graduate level education at institutions that don't have graduate level programs. And so that's where I always get kind of hung up, is if my institution doesn't have master's programs, why do I need to have a master's program to work there? And it's, I understand that we want to promote education and we want to promote higher ed and we want to promote learning and lifelong learning and all those things. But I see it as being so limiting for some people. And I mean, a lot of my research is in imposterism and gender roles and things like that. And I think about the women in my life who are not able to do a master's because their career was already slowed down by having to take maternity leaves. Mm-hmm. And or just the fact that women in our field are typically promoted less often than their male counterparts. And now we're adding needing to have graduate level education on top of it at an institution that doesn't have graduate level programs. And it's just, it seems like a bit of an imbalance in our field. And so I don't really want to see us needing to require master's levels education, but it's a thing in the States for sure. And I'm glad that it's not a thing up here. And I hope that it stays that way for now.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Yeah, it can definitely be a barrier. I know that in most cases, a master's degree is considered a preferred qualification. Mm-hmm. But when everyone you're competing against already has one, then it's not really a preferred qualification. Yeah. And yeah, I it can be a barrier for individuals, certainly. And then, like you mentioned earlier, for our listeners in Canada, maternity leave is much longer than in the U.S.
Yes, it is. Great. In Canada, we typically a year. your institution doesn't pay for the full year, or most post-secondary institutions in Canada don't pay for the full year, but you qualify for employment pay through the government of Canada. And they actually just recently, right when I was going on maternity leave, just after, they extended it to 18 months, which is wild. And I mean, it's a huge perk of living in Canada that you get that extra time with your family, but it does also really slow down your career. And so it's a choice. It's a hard choice, but it is a choice you're making for sure.
Yeah. Those, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about at the top about, you know, life is long and is short. And you know what, during those really formative years of, you know, having a baby, probably want to like be there. And if that comes at, you know, the cost of, you know, taking steps up in your career, that's, you know, sometimes sacrifices are necessary when they're ready.
Yes. Yes.
Which really ties well into the next question that I have, which I definitely wrote down, was how does parenting inform your practice in advising or supervising and vice versa?
Oh my gosh. Yes. So much, so much. So I have a daughter named Ella. She just turned six. And actually I have a picture of her right here. I'm going to do one of this. Look at how cute she is. Her little graduation hit.
Oh.
She graduated kindergarten, which wasn't a thing that I was aware that people did, but she did. So congratulations. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I love being a parent and I love advising and I love supervising, and they are shockingly similar given the difference in age more often than not. I have a very, very smart kid. She's a very, very sweet kid. And we are able to have similar conversations that I have with my employees and I have with kind of escalated students. I talk a lot with her. She's got to be the only six-year-old in the world that knows what a proportional response is. And we talk about proportional responses. And it started as a, like, this is a big reaction to a small problem. And now it's turned into, is this a proportional response? And she, no, mama. Sometimes it's yes, mama. And I think the same thing with students. And it's like, especially with our high-achieving students, like, you got a bad grade on one quiz. Is this really worth giving up the whole program for? Is that a proportional response to a seemingly small problem? No. Okay, so let's de-escalate it and figure out how we want to actually approach this. Yeah. With employees, same. They have very big reactions to things that they can't necessarily impact. And it's about kind of whittling down that sphere of influence and figuring out what we can impact. We talk a lot about working with students and having them grow skills in having ownership of their education and being empowered to do their, to take control of their education and be responsible for their educational choices. And those are all things that we talk about as parents too, with kids, and like, you have to own the responsibility and you have to own the consequences of your decisions. Another thing I think about a lot is there's this Venn diagram, and it's one circle is things that you care about, and the other circle is things you can change and you want to live kind of where the two intersect. And I think that is what we want to talk to our employees about, to our students about, to our staff members about. And again, also something we talk to our kids about, where it's like, no, you can't have ice cream for breakfast every day. I know that you care about having ice cream for breakfast every day, but you can't. And here's all the reasons why. So let's live in that middle section. Though I would also love to have ice cream for breakfast every day. So yeah, that's a hard one to say no to. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. Crazy how often the two are the same.
Smoothie bowls are a thing. So that's basically ice cream, right? So
yes,
it's
100%.
You're basically there. Like,
it's close, right?
You have a glass of milk with a smoothie bowl and it's just a deconstructed ice cream.
See? Then I might as well have the constructed version, like chocolate sauce on it and call her a day.
Yeah, I love that kind of proportional terminology that you used earlier. I think that's so valuable. It's something that I too saw when I was advising pharmacy students, where you're in a pressure cooker and you get your first B minus, and you've had a 4.0 since you were seven, and the world crumbles in front of your face. And we have to zoom out and look at the big picture and be like, does this B minus make you less of a person?
Yes.
And what kind of aspects can we shift in your mindset to build in more growth, to imply that improvement can be made? Mm-hmm. Perfectionism, while really valuable, specifically to myself, I'm a very great person, isn't always the best thing either. And we can all grow and learn, both from each other and from our, you know, the children that we serve and the students that we serve and the coworkers that we have and our supervisors who are also sometimes Brie.
Yeah. And it's the perfectionism one, I think, is a really interesting one. You're talking about like the 4.0 student who now gets their first B minus. When I was first starting at Mount Royal, I worked with our Faculty of Education students, and they are like high achieving to the nth degree. The program average GPA was like a 3.8 out of 4. It was just wild how high achieving they were. And there would actually be times where I'd have students in my office and I'd have to show them like, okay, so you got a B minus. In one course, we're not going to say an assignment. You got a B minus in a course. Mm-hmm. 1 of 10 courses, that looks like it has a big impact on your GPA. I mean, it doesn't, but it looks like it does. And then we would go and we'd actually do the math of like, what is the impact in a year? What is the impact in 2 years? What is the impact when you're graduating? Mm-hmm. And just seeing the impact slowly whittle away and become smaller and smaller and smaller. And then saying, okay, so what do you think the impact of that B minus is going to be in 15 years when you're applying for an AVP job? Very little. Nobody's going to care about the B minus that you got when you were 18 years old and brand new in your degree. They're barely going to care about it when you graduate because it's going to have so little impact. So think about that kind of far down goal, whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. And then what is actually the impact? Is it big or is it small? And if it is big, fine. How do we work with it? How do we work around it? How do we learn from it and move forward?
Yeah, those are conversations that I've kind of had to flip with students too, where there really is a shift in, you know, I failed my first class. I have to retake it. And what does that look like? And because this happened, what do I do now? And I'm like, well, an F means you made an attempt, or with a withdrawal means you made an attempt. Any grade that you take is an attempt. And you have to attempt again. And I teach people that want to be educators now. And we do a lot of conversations about, you will have students who fail your class.
Yeah.
And how much more can you empathize with a student midterm that begins failing your class? And how can you shift their mindset like you shifted yours? So It's a lot of that kind of conversation too.
And it's hard. It's hard to do. It's hard to shift your mindset from like, how would you approach this with one of your students? But it's an important thing to be able to do, especially, I think, is people working with young students, whether they be 7 or 20.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're the same. Yeah,
basically.
The age, they act exactly the same.
Yeah, 100%.
So my next question here, shifting a little bit to, the reason for the season, why we're here to begin with, is what got you connected with Nakata on your kind of journey into suddenly becoming part of this career path?
Yeah, it's another kind of by accident story, but I love it. And I consider myself also an adopted Region 9 member. I know Matt said that you were, but I'm making him adopt me also. My first Nakata conference was actually a Region 9 conference. And it was just because the Region 8 conference was after the end of our budget year at the institution I was at the time. And so my supervisor was like, great, go to one of these, but you have to go to Region 9. And it was in California, and it was must have been like beginning of March, and it was very cold where I was from. And I was like, yes, 100%. I will go to California if I must. And so off I jetted to the Nakata Region 9 conference in LA, and it was amazing. And I mean, I'm a very introverted person. And so going to a conference without anybody's is a little bit daunting. And I didn't go to any of the like for fun stuff in the evenings. I just sat in my hotel room, and I think I was watching Scrubs at the time, and I just would like eat pizza in bed and watch Scrubs. But the number of people that I met during the sessions during the day, like I still talk to some of them. And it's one of my favorite stories actually from an Nakata conference. Was at this conference, and I went to the newcomers breakfast on the the first day, it was like the first conference or first time conference attendees breakfast. And again, very introverted. So kind of wanted to throw up in my shoes a little bit, but I was like, I'm going to go, I'm going to find a table. I'm going to make small talk. It's going to be great. And everybody's going to live through this and it'll be fun. And I sat down at this table and was like trying not to make eye contact with anybody and really hoping somebody else initiated small talk. Everybody else was talking to each other. And so I finally looked at the person sitting next to me and I said, what about you? Is this also your first time conference? And they very politely were like, no, I've been to a few. And I was like, great. And then the speakers started and they were like, and now we're going to introduce one of the members of the board to come and give some words. And it was this person that was sitting next to me. And I was like, are you new too? And they were, yeah, part of the board. And so I was mortified, but then kind of followed that person around and met other people that were also involved in NACADA and started talking to them about their experiences and was like, this is cool. I think I could like these people. And so then about a year and a half later, I was on a conference planning committee. I then moved to Mount Royal and my supervisor there was on the steering committee for Region 8 at the time. And so I planned a couple of conferences with her and then I became an Alberta liaison. Actually, when I was on maternity leave, that was a really good way for me to kind of stay connected to NACADA, though admittedly the first two meetings I was at, I was not very useful. I think I just kind of sat there. The first meeting, I was about 14 months pregnant. And the second meeting, I had like a 3-day-old baby. But it was a great way to stay connected to the field while I was on mat leave. And then I was a region chair after that. And I did ELP, the Emerging Leaders Program, which is coming back, I keep hearing. So that's exciting. And yeah, here we are. It's been wild.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. I love that. In our field, so much of it kind of comes to chance. You know, I happened into this role. Yeah. I saw this description of this job on LinkedIn and I applied and now I'm here and now I'm doing this thing.
100%.
I got involved in NACADA when I was in grad school interning, the liberal arts college that my husband was working at in housing. And I was like, great, I'll just do my internship where we live because he was required to live in the dorm. So I guess here I am, free labor, please take me. And that was the first time I submitted a conference proposal, was for the 2020 conference, that best conference that never happened,
yes,
in Victoria. And it was such a wild experience, you know. I had such a phenomenal team of people and supervisors that were like, we want you to have this experience. So you're going to be the one in charge of submitting the proposal. And it was really formative and valuable. And then the conference didn't happen, but that's okay. thanks, COVID.
It did. It was just 2 years late. It's fine. Right.
I had COVID during that conference and I could miss it.
Oh, it was okay. So full disclosure, 2020, I think, was actually one of my favorite conferences and it never actually happened. But it was, so for the listeners, we were planning the Region 8 conference in Victoria and Janine and Melina from the University of Victoria were co-chairing this conference and they had put together one of the best conferences I'd ever seen. I was on the planning committee. It was March 2020. I flew out. A colleague of mine and I walked over to the conference center. Once we'd landed, we got there a day early, as planning committees often do. And we walked in and our Region 8 chair at the time was like, joke's on you, conference is canceled. And about 40 people had already arrived for the conference. And so we were like, well, I guess we'll just strike down the conference. But we still had all the food and all the beverages and stuff for the reception. So we just had a party. And it was great. And I met some people over that day and a half where we were all stranded in Victoria trying to book flights out that I am friends with to this day, and colleagues, and made connections. And misery loves company. Nobody wanted the conference to be canceled, but here we were. And yeah, it was wild. And then, yes, you were on the 2022 conference planning committee, which Shay Ellingham and I were co-chairing. I got COVID like the minute before you were supposed to come, which was the worst. But yeah, the conference was great.
Yeah, I think I was I was like 16 hours or something from getting on the ferry.
Wild.
I was like, oh, that's awful. And then I had COVID. But yeah, it was a great time. I've since.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
It was a time. It was another time. And my first in-person regional conference was last year. Like that's how long it took for me to be able to.
Actually, it was Vegas. That was your first one.
Vegas was my first regional conference. I helped plan 22's regional conference, but I couldn't go.
Oh, no. Did you go to, so what annual conferences have you got to then?
I went
Those are very different.
I guess I did the 2021 regional Region 8 conference virtually.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
I did that one, but my first annual conference was Portland, which I also helped plan.
Wow. Yeah. So you're new to the in-person stuff.
Yeah. It was, yeah. I started, you know, like
That's
months
great.
before COVID happened. How did COVID shift the way that your office advises?
It didn't change anything at all. No, nothing.
Yeah.
Everything, all of the things changed. It was exhausting. We, as an institution, we didn't do any virtual advising at the time. When COVID hit, we were completely in person. Sometimes we do over the phone. Yeah. And I mean, it hit, I was talking about this with somebody else recently, and it hit at the conference. We all flew home. I remember talking to my supervisor and saying, like, if this is the big deal it is, I have to work from home. My husband is immune compromised. I need to protect my family. She was like, yeah, you do what you got to do. We'll probably only be home for a couple of weeks. And I was like, perfect. Then I'm not going to learn anything new about how to virtual advise. Because if it's 2 weeks, I'll just do this over the phone and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the 2 weeks, so now we're like end of March. They're like, maybe June. Maybe we'll be able to come back in June. And that was when finally we were like, okay, well, now we have to figure out this whole Google Meets thing and what that's going to be like, because we were a Google institution.
Of course.
And it was wild. And I think there are pros and cons, for sure, to being able to do virtual advising. I don't think that there's the same level of connection in a virtual appointment. It's just harder to do. But is also way more convenient for some of our student populations. So people who are working 40 hours a week, as many of them are, because the cost of living is so bananas high here in Canada right now, they can't necessarily come to school all day, also work 40 hours a week and have time for an in-person appointment. So maybe virtual is the only way they can do it. And it's on a lunch break. Great. Let's do it. It also taught us how to do more group advising in a virtual setting. Again, group advising, even in person, not as effective as one-on-one, but in a virtual setting, you can throw people into breakout rooms and then you get group advising with some of the advantages of one-on-one advising. It also made us get really, really good at our tools and resources, because we didn't have the same opportunities to kind of work through tech issues with students. So we had to kind of ramp up our online presence game, and that has continued. So there were definitely some advantages that came from having to go remote. All of my plants in my office died. I always have lots of office plants, and they all died, and I was very, very sad. But then I learned how to keep them alive in my home, and now there's plants all over. So see, advantages.
Wow.
Pros and cons.
Pros and cons. Short pros and long life. Spans
short and long life, pros house, and cons.
Yeah, of houseplants. It's true.
Yeah, exactly.
I was gifted a poinsettia not this past Christmas, but the Christmas before. And I was like, I've never tried to keep one of these alive. I'm going to try and do that. And all its leaves fell off. And I was like, I'm going to keep watering this thing. And the leaves grew back. And now I have a poinsettia.
What about your cats? Those are no bueno for your cats, my friend.
Nina is fine. Nina is not a jumper. She is not. And it was an office plant, but I don't get direct sunlight. And my poinsettia needs direct sunlight. And so it's in my kitchen windowsill above my sink. And Nina will, one, never go near the sink, will never jump on the counter, and will never touch my poinsettia. And then eventually I will move it back to a window in here that has direct sunlight. But I will say.
We could do a whole podcast about cats and plants and advising.
My cat and my poinsettia.
It's wild.
Both alive. Just going to say that. I'm sure there's an advising analogy in there somewhere.
There is. There totally is.
Please find it.
The one about, like, sometimes your cat eats your plant. My cat almost ended up on the front porch in a box saying free cat because she ate one of my plants that I've been very, very carefully trying to grow. But she ate the plant and I helped take care of the plant. And now the plant is lovely again. And that there's the connection to advising.
There you go. Yeah.
Learn from mistakes.
That's the tie back. With the growth that you feel like you've experienced in the kata, what would you say is your favorite moment or story? I know we just talked about the 2020 conference and how much you loved it. Is there one thing?
There are so many things. I have so much fun at those conferences. I've been to some really great sessions. And I'm not going to necessarily call any of them out, but I think I always just am so encouraged by the energy of conferences. Mm. As an introvert, it is exhausting. But I also love every minute of it. So it's a very strange kind of personal thing I always have to work through where I'm like, I'm going to be so tired, but this is going to be so good. So I'm going to tell this story. When we were in, I don't remember where, it was you and me, my friend. Must have been Vegas. Where did we go last? What month is it? Nope, it was Orlando. I can't remember what month.
About the Bob Ross session.
I am going to talk about the Bob Ross session.
I pulled it up. I will tell you exactly which, because it was the one I was going to pull. It was called The Joy of Advising, Bob Ross Inspired Life Lessons for Advisors and Students. Shout out to both Kip and Rachel from the University of Alabama, Birmingham for that wonderful session.
It was amazing. And I still have, on my
bulletin board
beside me, I have the pin. And it's with my Advising is the Core Key to Success pin and my Holistic Advising. I was like, I can't read the last word. No meowed or what pin. It's with my Bob Ross pin up there. But this session was really great. So for those of you who didn't get to come to this, I'm sad because you should. But it was just about all of the different stages in a Bob Ross painting, which I'm obsessed with Bob Ross. So I was all over this and how we can apply all of those to the student journey as well. But what I think really stood out for me is, so you may or may not remember, but we were some of the last people to arrive. And we ended up sitting on the floor, leaning against the wall. And there was like 20 other people back there with us. Yep. And it was just other people would walk in. Nobody was like, oh, there's no seats, I'm going to leave. They were like, this is what I need to do to attend this session. Okay, I guess I'm sitting on the floor. And so there was just like hordes of us sitting on the floor. We could still see what was going on, taking notes. We all had our laptops on our lap and we're like typing away. They were handing out these buttons. And it was just, it felt like a little family. Just like, this is what we have to do to make this work. So we're going to make it work. Yeah. Nobody cares that we're sitting on the floor. And I will think about that at the most random times, but it's often kind of the example that comes to my mind when I think about like the culture of Nakata, because that's the culture. It's like, just do what you got to do. We're all in this together. Let's make it work. And it's, it was also an amazing session that I am definitely going to try to get a virtual recording of or something. So I'm going to show it to my team too. So good.
I still have the handouts downloaded on my phone. So.
Me too.
Good.
They're so good.
They're great. And
huge shout out.
The video clips that pair with each of the things were so great. The idea of starting with a blank canvas and then talking about happy little accidents at the end too.
Happy little accidents and everybody needs a friend. Yeah. Oh, there were so many.
Yeah.
Oh, so great.
Another great session. I don't have it pulled up and I apologize for our listeners, but there was a phenomenal one about the music of Stephen Sondheim. That was on the morning of the last day of the conference. And it was so lovely. And we all got to listen to Sondheim in the morning.
I wish I got it.
Great way to kind of tie a bow on the session and the conference as a whole. So it was really lovely.
Oh, I wish I got to that one too.
Yeah, it was.
So many.
I think it was first thing that was like the first session in the morning on the last day. So bummer. We have two more questions for you.
Two more questions.
One question. Mm-hmm. What is one piece of advice that you would give to a colleague or a supervisor? Or excuse me, let me try that one more time, because the actual question is, what one piece of advice that a colleague or supervisor shared with you that you want to pass off to our listeners?
Yeah, so I love this one. So my current supervisor introduced me to the world of Brené Brown's Dare to Lead.
Yes.
I'd heard of Brené before. I'd seen all of her, not seen all of her, but like seen a lot of her TED Talks, seen a lot of mm-hmm. the little clips that make the rounds on the YouTube and the Instagram. Mm-hmm. And, but I hadn't read Dare to Lead. And she gifted it to me when she was leaving our previous institution. And I have read it and I learned a lot from it. But there was one quote, and it's actually in her special as well, which I think is on Netflix, and I would highly recommend, that I wanted to kind of highlight. And so the quote, and there is one swear word in it. So if you are of the sensitive ears, just earmuffs for a minute here. But the quote is, if you are not in the arena getting your ass kicked on occasion, I am not interested in or open to your feedback. There are a million cheap seats in the world today filled with people who will never be brave with their own lives, but will spend every ounce of energy they have hurling advice and judgment at those of us trying to dare greatly. Hmm. And I think about that a lot. I think about how easy it is nowadays to be subject to the commentary of others, both in social media and professionally. And it's this culture of, I have an opinion, so I have the right to share it, instead of maybe spending more time reflecting and responding in a less, I don't want to say judgy way, but we'll say judgy way for now. And it's about choosing which opinions you can take in and really reflect on, and which opinions you need to just kind of brush off and not put a whole lot of stock in. And I really liked how she spun it up, like, if they're not people that you would want in the arena kind of fighting the fight with you, then they don't matter. Their opinion does not matter. And it's an important skill to learn, to drown them out, because it's easy to focus on the negative comments and not see the positive feedback that you're getting, because we're so pinpointed on the negative. And so, yeah, that is a quote I come back to a lot in my life, just to remember whose opinion I value and whose I need to just not today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is great advice, especially when people give you unwarranted advice. I'm sure you probably felt similarly when you were pregnant or had just had a child, getting so many unwarranted like pieces of advice from people.
Well, and when I was a brand new parent, I would always say, I'll take all the advice, or I'll hear all the advice. I might not take it, but I will listen to it. Mm-hmm. But now I think I've learned, like, sometimes I just don't want to hear it. Sometimes I'm not looking for advice. Sometimes I'm just doing my best. And I need to just remember that and be a little bit gentler with myself, and remember that as much as continuous improvement is great, sometimes status quo is also fine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just do what you got to do. Good for you, not for me. Yeah. Do what you got to do.
That's another thing that I've kind of realized in advising, is sometimes a student will share or disclose something that they're struggling with or worrying about, and they don't need your help to figure out what they're doing. They just need yep. someone to listen. And I think that's been one of the things that I've been carrying on this kind of academic year, is like, I don't need to give you all the resources unless you are like, actually, I can offer the options mm-hmm. if you want to hear them. And kind of prefacing with that has been really valuable for me. So.
Well, and I try to do that with my staff too, with my team members, because it's, like I said earlier, the people that work in advising are passionate about what they do. Nobody does this for the money. We're not raking in millions here. And so it's important, though, to kind of curb that passion with realism. And sometimes you have to have the opportunity to just be passionate. So if I feel like a rant's coming on, sometimes I'll say, like, do you just want me to listen, or do you want me to help with this? And it doesn't matter what the answer is, I'm still going to be there. Yeah. But I mean, I do this with my partner sometimes too. With my husband, I'll say, like, do you just want to rant, or do you actually want help with this? Or I'll say, like, I just want to rant. I actually don't want your help with this right now. And it's important to be able to do both, and be able to solution for people, and just also be a bit of a sounding board and just sit there and be like, yes, everything you're saying is 100% valid. Yeah. Good on you.
There you go. Active listening and empathy is so important. Yeah. And Brené Brown is huge on that too. And I love that.
Yes.
I'm reading Gifts of Imperfection right now, which is really hard for me because I am perfect. So I just can't relate to anything.
It's a struggle. It's a struggle being perfect, Thomas.
I actually can't read. It's a really hard thing for me. learning how to read with Brené Brown. important people. Brie, what closing thoughts do you have about your adventure in advising, and what is on the horizon for you? What are your hopes?
Yeah, I think my biggest piece of advice for people in advising would be to find your people. Brené talks about finding your board. I think I've heard that a few different places. We actually were in a session together, Thomas, where we talked about that too, also in Orlando, but finding your board, find your people. And I think it's really important. And your people don't even necessarily need to be like at your institution. Like, you are one of my people. We don't even live in the same country. You're still one of my people. And I think NACADA is a great place to find those people and really build those connections. It's post-secondary is hard. It's a hard job. It's a hard place to work. It's a hard place to live, but it's also a really great place to work and live. But it can be thankless. It can be exhausting. It can be tiring, especially when we are all, whether we can other states, at the mercy of political change and demographic change that we have no or little control over. And so I think if you find your people, it'll just make it easier to kind of push through the hard times so that you can get back to the good times. So that would be my biggest piece of advice is find your people, find your real people, the people that say your name in the room, even when you're not there. I know that's a saying that goes around a lot, like your champions. Those are the people you want to focus your time and energy on. As far as hopes, I don't know. This is a tricky one because I think COVID has made me shrink my hope timeline a little bit because it's like, you never know what 5 years from now is going to bring. We could be smack in the middle of a global pandemic. I would like to keep working with NACADA. I'm coming to the end of my time as region chair. I have zero intention of backing away from NACADA, though. I want to keep kind of my foot in that door and keep fighting the good fight. I think it's important to have a global community for advising like we do, and I would like to see it become more global. So I really would like to keep kind of picking away at that and how to become more international as an association. And then keep building these connections. Like, when you say that your first in-person conference was Portland, it's like that was just like a year and a half ago. Like, I feel like I've known you for years because we've been involved virtually for forever.
Right.
And there are other people across the association that, same thing, I have these great, I met Stephanie Schrader from the executive office for the first time in Orlando. And she said, she was like, it's our first time meeting face-to-face. And I was like, no, it's not. It can't be because I've known you forever. And so I want to keep building those connections and finding those people. And I think NACADA is a great place to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Brie, for being here and answering all my lovely questions and teaching me how to read.
Well, anytime. I could teach you to read while I teach Ella. It'll be great.
Perfect.
And yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for your questions. This was awesome. This was so much fun.
Oh, it's always a good time to chat with you, Brie.
Yes.